Please.
Hey, Jimmy D and the Wolf podcast. Here we are going live. How's your settling in to a routine after being away for almost a month?
It broke all of my internal biorhythms for about 3 days. I completely came apart for about 3 days. And I was doing weird stuff like falling asleep at 7 and waking up at 11 p.m., things like that. So it took a little while, but gigs lined me back out. Once I got like 3 or 4 gigs in a row, it was all back to normal. It's funny, though, because it seemed like it didn't bother me when we went east. When we came back, it seemed harder.
Yeah. Well, the excitement of going there, I feel, is always something that keeps you the adrenaline. Adrenaline can do a lot, I feel. So, yeah, I think if I don't lie to myself, it took me over a week to get back to schedule. They say the older you get, the longer it takes you to. I'm not 20 anymore. I know I look it, but I'm not. Surprise. I'm not 20 anymore.
Late 20s.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so it took me before I kept, you know, falling asleep or having to go to bed, just ran out of gas. I mean, my normal routine is I try to stay in my studio working on music or whatever till midnight. I couldn't do that for the first week or 10 days. I was falling asleep at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Well, I mean, for those of you just tuning in or don't know what we're talking about, we were in Europe, in Ukraine and Poland touring.
6 hours ahead, I believe. Was it 6 hours?
Well, you're an hour ahead of me. So then Ukraine and Poland are an hour apart. So you're talking Ukraine or Poland? I mean, it was 8 hours from me to Poland. They're 8 hours ahead.
Yeah.
Ukraine. 7 hours to Warsaw for me, but it's 7 and 6 for you from where you are, because you're an hour ahead of where I'm at. I'm in Nashville. You're in Indiana.
And we got to see our man Alex again today, didn't we?
Yeah, we did talk to Alex, our buddy, building an app for us.
Yeah,
details to be coming.
Dude, I'm so excited about that whole thing.
Yeah, we've got building an app. We're joining the 21st century. And if you're a business person, haven't built an app.
Yeah, you have to.
You just have to. It's just a requirement if you're going to be in business.
It's hard if you don't have your own app. No, I'm excited about it, and I think it's going to help a lot.
Yeah, so we're going to be building an app for musicians specifically, a need that we think, I mean, more details to be coming, forming a new business, another new business.
Yeah.
We have a bunch of businesses in Madison.
With them going, so we need to start more immediately.
We have a taxi service, Easy Ride, taxis in Madison, Indiana. What's the furthest trip we've had?
I think Don's done some airport runs, like taking people to the airport in Louisville.
That's an hour, hour and a half, right? Yeah,
an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I love our crew, man. All of our drivers are characters. They're funny guys. So I'm glad we did that. You know, all of the businesses we have, I love all of them.
Because your superpower brother running our construction business.
The best, man. And he should have his own reality show because he's the funniest dude.
He is.
Yeah. Ralph cracks me up, man. He's like, he's in his own little world, and he has been as long as I can remember. And he's the older brother, so I've known him my entire life. And it's like that dude just marches to the beat of his own drummer, and he's in his own world, and I love him for it.
Yeah, he's a guy that doesn't waste time. And so Jimmy and I had a 2-hour phone call strategy meeting on all our different ventures. And one of them required talking with Ralphie. And I was laughing about, you're going to have to go get on a job site and talk to him between hammer blows.
So true.
Because he doesn't waste time. You told me he stands up when he eats.
He does. It's frustrated my mother my entire life. Like, even like huge occasions, like if it's Thanksgiving or Christmas, he'll eat like a turkey dinner with, you know, cranberry relish and the whole bit, dumplings and mashed potatoes and dressing. And he stands up and eats really, really fast. He's always done before everybody else is done. And out on the front porch, like smoking a cigarette by the time everybody else has their third or fourth bite in.
And the coolest thing about him, he wears his, you know, a lot of people wear, you know, a baseball hat. Yeah. You wear, what do you call it? An Irish like, hat?
Yeah.
What is that called?
Yep.
Cap?
Yeah.
Ralph, he wears a welding hat.
Everywhere. And he used it. It was even better before because he would wear shorts and his work boots and his welding hat. And that was gold, dude. That was money. I remember seeing him at the gas station one day and looking across the street and just being like, that crazy bastard is my brother. The guy over there with the welding hat and the shorts and the steel-toe work boots.
If you don't know what a welding hat, it's not, we're not talking about the helmet with that covers your face. It's the usually underneath. The guys that wear that helmet all day long, it's a cloth hat, but it's a very distinctive design. I don't know. The visor is very small. It's very distinctive. If you don't know what it is, you probably wouldn't even know that's a welding hat, but it's to be worn underneath the welding helmet, I think. So that band probably doesn't cut into your head. I don't know what the purpose is. Do you know what the purpose of the welding hat is?
I have no idea, man.
But what guys who weld usually wear that when they take their welding helmet off. No, if anyone listening to this envisioned Ralphie walking around with a welding helmet.
Right.
Darth Vader kind of look. That's not what we're talking about.
It's funny, man, because just the fact that he wears it, like when he walks up, it's like, this is a guy that, like, he's not messing around, you know, the fact he wears that hat all the time.
And he's so proficient, you know. Yeah. How many certifications and things does he have?
Crazy, man. He's licensed in like
HVAC.
He's really a brilliant guy. Plumbing. It's funny because he has always had like the things that I was never really, really good at were things that he would just excel at. And, you know, there were three brothers close in age, so we were all fiercely competitive with each other. And it was like the things that I wasn't good at, Ralphie was great at. And the things that Ralphie wasn't good at, I was good at. So, I mean, competition is, it's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely.
Now, and it drives people a lot. Even like with the music stuff, man, I mean, I don't think it came more naturally to me than it did any of my brothers, you know, two of my brothers played, my sister Becky played, and I just spent 1,000 more hours on it than they did. Because when you're the little guy, you want to beat them at something. You know, I was the youngest, so it's like guitar was about the only shot I had at the time when I was like 11 or 12.
Well, which brings up a topic that I saw Eric Clapton, who's always been my number one influence on guitar. And Eric Clapton is in his late, I think he's over 75. I think he's 76 now. And he was a raging alcoholic. Mm-hmm. I mean, raging. I mean, just for decades. Finally kicked it. And but they're saying that all of that alcoholism gave him nerve damage, and now he's reaping that. And he says it's hard work to play guitar, and he's not the shredder that he was. I mean, he'd kill anybody on stage if there'd be a cutting contest. He had Marcus King on there with him, and Marcus King, you know, fired it up. And I looked over at Clapton, and I was like, okay, Clapton's really gonna go now. He stopped. He ended the song. But anyway, talking about brothers, Jimmy Vaughn opened up for Clapton. Jimmy Vaughn, his brother Stevie Ray Vaughn, was Stevie Ray Vaughn, who unfortunately died in a horrible helicopter crash. Just so sad. What, think of all the music we could have gotten if Stevie would have survived.
Too, man.
What's that?
He just dialed it in for all, and for as great as he was, he just really got it together. He just dialed it in on that last album where his playing, writing, everything was coming together.
Absolutely. Well, he wasn't, first time he played, he was playing sober. He'd been a raging alcoholic and never played on stage, not being completely drunk. And he said it was amazing how clear. Well, it wasn't a driving accident. I mean, he got in a helicopter and the helicopter crashed. So it wasn't his fault or anything like that. But so Jimmy Vaughn is older than Stevie. And I read the biography of Stevie Ray, which came out a few years ago. Of course, I got it as soon as it came out. And they're talking about how Stevie looked up to his brother and how Jimmy was the better guitar player, even into the teen years. And neither Jimmy and I, this Jimmy, can believe there was ever a time in history that Jimmy was better than Stevie. Maybe when Jimmy was a baby and couldn't even.
Exactly.
Because the difference in the players are unbelievable. I mean, again, Jimmy hasn't improved.
As soon as Stevie Ray Vaughan got his thumb over the neck of the guitar, it was all over. Because he could wrap his hand on the neck.
You know, but, you know, Jimmy's got a vibe. You know, he plays with some of his songs. He's got that Leslie speaker going, and it's but a certain kind of a tone.
There's a line, man, and the way that Stevie Ray Vaughan played the guitar, it's like, okay, that's how well a human being can possibly play the guitar. You know what I mean? I don't know that there's a level past playing as well as that guy did. You know, they reach a point where it's all just, you know, like Hendrix and Stevie and Eric Clapton, where it's like, yeah, that's as good as you can possibly do it. And to me, like, those are the guys that are on that level, and there's nobody else.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it was just kind of interesting. I mean, I enjoyed some of the songs. I mean, Jimmy's opening for Eric, you know, that's probably a good gig for him at this stage in his life, you know.
Sure.
You know, he had a whole horn section up there with him, you know, and two saxes and a trumpet, no trombone player. Baritone sax, tenor sax, and a trumpet. You know, your prototypical trio would be a trumpet, a sax, and a trombone, right?
Yeah.
It's a typical horn trio. But he had a bari, a tenor, and a trumpet. Just interesting.
Did he have his capo out?
Yes, he did. In fact, that was what I was laughing about. He plays Texas Flood, and he puts a capo on the third fret, and he's like soloing it's just like such a hack.
There's such back and forth with the capo thing, man. It's like, I remember studying when people are like, don't you dare use that, you know? Don't you dare. And other teachers I had, you know, well, I've only studied with a handful of guitar players, but just the mindset, every guitar player has a different mindset about a capo. It's usually either the biggest crutch ever, or they're just okay with it, you know. But I think Carol DeCamp had the best advice, because he was like, get to where you don't need it, and then you can start using it. That actually makes perfect sense to me. As long as you don't need the capo is really cool. It's a tool. As long as you could, you know, get by without it.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I was a little bittersweet for me, because I haven't seen Clapton in 20 years. And last time I saw him was actually a week before 9/11, 2001 in Fargo. Of course, he was on the top of his game, and he had, the organ player, the guy that, what's his name? That was the fifth Beatle for one of their albums. Billy, what's his name?
Billy Preston.
Billy Preston. Billy Preston was touring with him. Of course, he had Nathan East as his bass player. I think Steve Gadd was his drummer. And it was just a phenomenal show. And Billy Preston had his thing, and he came out and danced around the organ. I mean, he was a character, that guy.
Yeah.
He was a showman. And as last time I saw him, and you know, Clapton's, he can't play like that now. I mean, there were a few licks that were like, oh, that's the old Clapton. Now he's getting into it. Now he's going to do it. Now he's kicking her in.
Yeah.
And then just like fade away.
It's terrible to see that too, man, because I think he's arguably like the biggest bridge musically between the original roots guys in blues music and everything that has happened since and currently. I mean, who else played with Muddy Waters and, you know, Freddie King and Albert King and BB King and all the British Invasion stuff and the Beatles and the Stones and Hendrix and every contemporary blues guitar player that you could possibly think of? I mean, that guy is like a living, breathing library of American roots music over the last, and really, you know, British stuff too, the British blues scene. I don't think, I mean, who else is that big of an important link? Maybe Buddy Guy, but.
Yeah, Buddy Guy, I wouldn't put him there. I mean, Clapton.
As great as.
He did the, and I'm sitting here when you said Beatles. Yeah, he played the guitar part on one of the, was it My Guitar Gently Weeps or was it something? My Guitar Gently
Weeps.
Yeah, he played the guitar part for the song,
yeah.
The Beatles song, When My Guitar Gently Weeps, where Harrison said, there's only one guy should play this, and that's Clapton. So yeah. Clapton comes in and guest solos on a Beatles, very, very famous Beatles song, Clapton singing that solo, or playing that solo. And George Harrison was no slouch. I mean, but he said, well, I'm going to have Eric come in and do this. And yeah, he played with B.B. King, and he was fast. As one of his most favorite guys was Robert Johnson.
Yeah.
And he did an album of all Robert Johnson covers in the aughts. I think it was in the aughts that that came out.
Yeah, but they used two guitar players. It shows how great Robert Johnson was. I think it was like Clapton and Andy Fairweather Low, and I think Doyle Bramall, too, is on that album. There's a great DVD of them recording it, and they're figuring out the parts. And it's funny because, you know, Robert Johnson played all that stuff by himself. Yeah, yeah. Like two or three incredible guitar players work out one guy's parts, and they're still sometimes kind of like, you know, does he do this? But I learned many years ago that they sped up the records for a lot of those Robert Johnson recordings. So some of that stuff, it's almost physically impossible to play it.
At the speed that we consume.
The recording is in, and it's why his voice has that weird kind of creepy timbre to it, I think. Because there's some of that stuff that, like Preaching Blues, I mean, just the patient, what's going on between like the index finger and the thumb, he didn't do that in real time. There's no way. Because nobody's done it since. You know, and I mean, there's been a lot of guitar players since Robert Johnson. But yeah, the DVD of Me and Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, that's the album, right? Me and Mr. Johnson. I couldn't remember the name of it. Yeah, and I think it came out in
recordings.
Well, Eric's album came out maybe 2000 in the aughts, 2005 or something like that. And he's not, another thing he doesn't get credit for, he's a pretty awesome singer, actually.
It's insane, dude.
And that's all he can really do now. And there were a couple songs that literally brought tears to my eyes. Wonderful Tonight, which every band I was ever in, you had to learn to play Wonderful Tonight. And I'm like, this is a hack song. Solo's so easy, I can do it. You know, it's not a complex song. Right. And, but when he played that, literally the emotion he put into it, and the solo is very simple, very, you know, very, everybody knows that lick, those licks, and they're just simple licks, and but when he did that song, the emotion he put into that was phenomenal. There was another song too. Oh, and he did I Shot the Sheriff. with an incredible beat that, you know, of course he's got all those, he had two drummers, Steve Gadd and a guy I didn't know, a younger black guy. And of course, Nathan East. And he's got Chris Stanton on keyboards. And then the other guy on B3 is a famous guy. I had to look him up because I didn't know his name, but he's a famous guy from the UK. And I did look it up, but I'll have to come back with it. But, you know, so he had, of course, an incredible band. And I Shot the Sheriff was one of my highlights. They really put some groove to that, and it was pretty phenomenal.
Do any of the really raunchy blues stuff, like any of the stuff off of From the Cradle?
I recorded the entire concert, so I'll have to go back. And he did, of course, the JJK. He did either Tulsa Time or what's the other one?
After Midnight.
Keys to the Highway. He might have done Keys to, I think he did Keys to the Highway. Mm-hmm. Isn't that JJ? Maybe that's not JJ Cale.
Key to the Highway is, there's a lot of guys did that, blues guys.
That's not JJ. Tulsa Time is JJ Cale, wrote JJ Cale.
Tulsa Time is Don Williams.
What?
Yep. Don Williams wrote Tulsa Time. JJ Cale wrote After Midnight and
Cocaine. He wrote Cocaine.
He wrote Cocaine and he wrote After Midnight. And there's something else. One of his other big ones was a JJ Cale song. My favorite Clapton album is From the Cradle.
Yeah, I know.
That album is unbelievable, dude. The first time that I was.
It is.
I think it just made the greatest blues album that's ever been done.
Yeah, and it's got so many cuts. I think it's got 18 cuts.
And the guitar playing on it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. It's, and 1 through 18 is just off the hook.
Sick.
They're all 18.
It just blows up every solo on that whole album.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw him on tour. In Japan on that tour, my Japanese girlfriend who didn't speak English. We went to in Osaka. He came to Osaka and I took her and she was amazed because she's a keyboard player. Was still, I think she still is classically trained. And afterwards I asked her what she thought about the concert and all she could do was rave about the keyboard player. I'm like, how about Eric? How about no, I like the keyboard player. What would you expect? You know, that's your instrument. You're going to focus on that, right?
Of course. I do the same thing, man. I could see a band with the greatest rhythm section in the world, and I would watch the guitar player the entire time.
Yeah, now, that's the nature beast. Nature of the beast, yeah.
It's funny, though, because you can tell. Like, I played at my cousin's wedding on Saturday. And when another guitar player is watching you, you can tell. It's like undeniable, just the way that they watch you. And we played at my cousin's wedding Saturday, and there was this young dude. He was like 14. And I could just tell, I was like, just the way he's watching, and he's not like watching me and then watching somebody. I mean, he's like dug in, dude. He's like staring daggers through my hands while I'm playing. And we took a break, and this kid got up. He's 14, dude. He got up and started playing like finger style guitar. And he was great. Incredible. He played like some old Chet Atkins stuff. I couldn't believe it. And then I started talking and figured out he was like one of my little cousins or something. I was like, that makes it even better because I was even more proud of him. But yeah, 14. And he was doing all the like boom chucka, like Chet Atkins and playing the melody with the bass, and I was blown away by this kid. And he's supposed to call me. We're supposed to get together because I was like, man, I got a lot of, you know, guitar player friends I'd like to introduce you to. And I was like, how long you been playing? I thought he was going to say, since I was born. He said, well, I've been playing for about a year. I was like,
wow. Wow.
He was good too, dude. He sang. He sat up there with like all the confidence in the world, 14 years old. Played fingerstyle guitar and sang. I was just like, what is that about? You know, just got it. Some people just got it. The Clapton thing, you know, the recordings of Clapton when he was 16, he just had it. God-given for some people, you know. But, yeah, I mean, if he is losing some facility there that is that's a tough pill to swallow.
Well, he says he's got tremendous pains running up his leg, and he says it's just really hard work to play. You know, my hands don't work that well. You know, there were times that you take him into the average bar band guy and he's going to blow that guy away. I mean, I'm not saying he was unable to do anything. If you had a cutting contest with him and Jimmy Vaughn, he would have cleaned the floor. I mean, you know, just to compare, I mean, the guy he's only diminished compared to the levels that he was.
Right.
He's still pretty doggone amazing. Really was, but I just expected him to just, you know, like you're suddenly accelerating and you're, you know, just like blown away, mouth agape.
Velocity.
Why does he do that?
He always has incredible tone.
He does.
No matter what plays, man, you know, from the Cream days to all that in between country stuff, his guitar sound is always amazing.
He came out and did an acoustic set in the middle. You know, and he played Tears from Heaven, but he didn't do the finger pick. He didn't do all the parts, I noticed.
Yeah, that's a complex song.
You know, so played Layla acoustic. I got the whole recording, so I should probably go through it again. One of my highlights was I Shot the Sheriff. So well done. So well done. And then
King felt like.
What's that? Sorry.
Imagine what Marcus King felt like.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was a picture of Marcus King backstage because I follow him on Instagram. And his dad, who also is a guitar player, was standing there talking to Clapton. And Marcus King is facing them. And he's like in the photo of the picture, he's on the other side facing them. And you can see him between them. You know, the view is you can see him facing them. And the look on his face is like a kid that just had a Christmas that got everything he ever wanted. The look on his face. And he posted it on Instagram and he said, just look at my face. He was in heaven, you know, and be on stage with Clapton, because Clapton's a legend, you know. So, and Marcus came out and played very well. He's an outstanding guitar player. And they gave him two solos. The keyboard player was leading it. I mean, the B3 guy, let him sing. Got a one incredible voice. I got to look his name up again. He's a British guy. He's known to have incredible voices, I found out, but I did not know his name. And he said, Marcus, go around again. And Marcus did. And then everybody looks over at Eric. Now Eric's going to show him what it's up. No, yeah. I just ended the song. Ended the entire night because that was the encore and that was the end of the night. It was like, that's not the Eric of old. Eric would have just tore him a new one 2 years ago.
Right. How long did he play?
Oh, it was a long concert. It was, 10:45. And I got there. I don't think he started at 8. I have to see. It probably was 2 hours. I'm in 2 hours. That's a long time.
That's really for a
76-year-old guy.
Yeah.
You know, I've been to shorter concerts. I saw Three Doors Down. They played just a little over an hour and then they got out. I was like, what?
Watch concert footage from back in the day. A lot of those concerts were like 40 minutes long. Crazy. You know,
I saw Lone Bellow, the Lone Bellow at the Ryman. They played an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Bar owners want you to play like 4 hours. It's like, do you realize how much music that is? Insane. I've done it a million times, man. It's a lot of freaking music. Especially solo gig. Like, I won't even do those anymore. If they were like 4 hours, I'm like, no, I don't have it in me anymore. That's like 70 songs to play by yourself for 4 hours. It's a lot of songs.
A lot of music. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you got a whole band behind you, let everybody take a solo, you know, you can extend out a song. You know, let the B3 guy pick a solo. You got two drummers. Let each one take a solo. Not every song, but on the finale.
Right.
And you got Doyle Bramhall II playing. He takes some solos. Not every song, but he took some solos. He didn't have any horn players to take solos, but although Jimmy did, the intro or the opener had, as I said, the horn section. He didn't play Tough Enough. Didn't even play that.
Yeah.
No.
Did he do any Stevie songs?
He did. He did Texas Flood with a capo.
On the third
fret. On the third fret, yes.
That's great.
Isn't it? It's hilarious. I was just like, dude, I mean, it's been 20 years since I've seen you play that. And you could have learned how to do that in the 20 years since I last saw you play.
You think Stevie ever hit it from him?
Hit it from, oh, the capo?
Yeah.
My take is he loved his brother so much and looked up to him. He was older and never, you know, said it was biggest influence and all that. And
of course.
You know, he looked through the rose-colored glasses, I mean, of the older brother. And when, you know, our family time, family style. I like that album. That's a good album. The two of them on an owner album together.
Got the Telephone Song on it, man.
Telephone Song's amazing.
The song is the jam.
And then there's a song about, Jimmy singing it about, I Had a Dream Where Everybody Got Along. What's the name of it?
TikTok.
Yeah. Time slipping away. I like that song.
Yeah, I do too.
But the Telephone Song is the best one.
That's the best
on that album. I love that song. I love the version of TikTok that they did on the tribute. That was a little bit more gospel-y.
Yep. Tilt the World Band.
That was phenomenal. And apparently the lead singer died shortly after.
That whole tribute show is incredible.
It is, yeah.
Buddy Guy on there, man. I used to watch that 20 years ago. I would watch it over and over and over and over and over and try to figure out how he held that note that long.
Right. It had to have been some kind of a thing in his guitar. Well, what's your conclusion today?
He has the active mid-boost thing on a strap. It's the only thing I can come up with. And it's Buddy Guy. He's literally done like, I've seen a lot of guitar playing. He's literally done like the three most incredible guitar tricks I've ever seen anybody do. All of them were Buddy Guy.
What are the three tricks that Buddy
Guy? He's got some, like, extra that he pulls out every once in a while. Well, I saw him one time. I saw him throw a guitar in the air. He threw a Strat in the air. And a guitar came down, and he caught his guitar with one hand, and he caught it on the note that he ended the song on.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, and when I saw him do it, I was with a friend of mine, and I immediately looked at my friend, and I said, if he tried that 100 more times, he wouldn't be able to do that again. This was in Cincinnati, and we saw him two nights later in, like, Indy or Chicago or something. He did the same trick.
Oh, my gosh.
Another one. He broke a guitar string. All stacks in Cincinnati. He hit the note, broke the guitar string, caught the string when he broke it, started playing the guitar with the string that he just broke. You don't plan that. You know what I mean? He's just got some extra, like, and he's just having fun like a little kid. And then there was one, you know how he does the thing? He'll flip the guitar up and rub it on his shirt.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Well, he flipped the guitar up and was doing all that stuff. And somehow, like, his cord, like, got stuck in something. And he ended up playing the guitar with his, like, fretting it with his right hand while he was trying to get whatever went wrong undone. So the guitar's flipped around. He couldn't get it back. And so he, like, takes his left hand. He's trying to work this stuff out. And while he was doing that, he was, like, fretting notes with his right hand. So his guitar was flipped around. It's like, okay, buddy. You know, it's like you're on some other stuff that none of us mere mortals can do. And, I mean, other than him throwing the guitar up and catching it on that note, the other two were incidental, which were just, like, he's so good that he just – something goes wrong, he just pulls out tricks to get through it, you know.
Well, one of my favorite tricks is, I think it was Austin City Limits, Stevie Ray breaks a string. Was it Austin City Limits? And the guy comes out and without he keeps singing and playing while he switches guitars.
Right. The guy just straps the
other
Stratocaster over his back.
And it happened to be a song where there were some breaks so that the guitar playing stopped. It was a break, you know, da-da-da-da-da, and that was right in there, and they timed it perfectly when they switched between the two guitars was during that moment of silence. And it was like they planned it. But you watch it, and it was like unbelievable coordination.
Mm-hmm.
And he just looks over at the guy, and the guy comes running with his other guitar. It's like maybe they did practice it. It's like you practice stuff when you're playing football. You practice for all kinds of unknowns. Maybe they practice that. Hey, if I break a string, let's practice this.
Well, and you're out with the guy every night. You know, I mean, there's something about when you hang out with somebody all the time, we do it all the time. Like where you like think the same thought or say the same thing at the same time. You go, what the hell is that about? It's like when you're around somebody a lot, you know, I mean, his techs were probably with him all the time. They just probably didn't even think anything about it. Just automation, you know.
Yeah. And then at the combo, that little club up in Canada somewhere.
That is a scary performance.
He was so he sweated so much. His guitar was soaked.
Yeah,
he was on so much alcohol, drugs, who knows what.
But his playing on there, man.
Unbelievable. But at the end, toward the end, he takes his guitar off and he's banging it on the floor with the whammy bar. And then he picks it up and plays it.
You know, that guitar was almost done. His guitar, Stevie was going to have to retire that guitar. It only had a little bit of time left in it. His guitar tech told him many, many times because the neck had been planed and refretted and planed and refretted. And he kept doing the riding the guitar thing. And there's lots of articles of his guitar tech talking about it. So that guitar wasn't going to do very many more shows after that last one in Alpine Valley, like his number one Strat. It was just
Alpine Valley, that which is the last gig he ever did in his life. That
Strat was just about done because, I mean, Stevie was so hard on it, and they had planed the neck and refretted it and done all this work on the Strat that his tech was telling him for like years on end, if you keep doing that, this guitar is not going to hold up. You know, it's crazy.
Well, I think the audience for this podcast will be probably smaller than average. Nerding out on all things guitar oriented.
Got to do it every once in a while, man. It's good. If
those of you who are still with us, I see we got people still with us. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for watching.
Appreciate you.
Always go.
Hope you're having a great week. And so glad to be back in the U.S. of A, back into my routine. Tomorrow, I fly out to L.A., going to the Vid Summit meeting, all things YouTube. And hopefully I can meet some collaborators. Who knows?
Be good.
Learn how to grow my YouTube channel. If you want to check out my YouTube channel, by the way, it's The Tim Wolf.
LA.
YouTube.com/TheTimWolf. And check out, I post... My schedule is supposed to be 2 videos a week, but I sometimes slack and don't quite get 2 in. Hey, Michael, good to see you on here. Thank you for joining us. Let's see if I can put your comments on the deal.
Thank you, Michael.
So.
Be safe in LA, brother.
All right.
See you soon.
Okay, we'll see you guys every Monday. We did miss while we were in the Ukraine. Our apologies for that. And last week we also missed because we had some complications. But in general, we should be here every Monday.
Back on track.
Back on track. So
see you guys.
See you next time.